This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Is the mic on? Yes, mic is on. We are on and rolling. Welcome back to the Diva Chronicles. I am Natasha Hastings.
And your girl, Philly G, Felicia George.
I need to work on my intro. We have a special guest this week.
Hello, I am Olivia Baker.
All right, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, go get the background.
Want us to tell?
Mm. No, I can talk about it a little bit. So my name is Olivia Baker. I recently graduated from Stanford, and I'm in my first year as a professional runner.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, I've moved down to Texas to train with D2, Training Ground Elite, it's the name of our group, and I'm a training partner of Billy G and Natasha.
Yeah.
I've been here 7 years, and I barely know that TGE means Training Ground Elite.
I didn't know. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry.
She's up on it.
Yeah, so as Olivia said, she's a Stanford grad, first year of running pro. What would you say your specialty is? 800, 400?
Yeah, 400 and 800 for sure.
Okay, I said the 800 first because I felt like is your 800 your primary and then 400 secondary, or what do you think?
At the moment, I would say that that's the case, yeah. But I'm hoping at some point in my career to be equally good in both of them.
Okay. Well, girl, the way
big
you're
ambitions.
Training,
yeah. Yeah.
That 800 is taking your life over because, those workouts, I'd be like, Lord Jesus, I'll be on the sidelines praying for you guys. I lost my train of thought. I was getting ready to ask you something. Oh, no, I wasn't going to ask you something. Olivia is from New Jersey. What part of New Jersey again?
South Orange. Shout out to the 973.
Okay. We on here giving shout outs.
Area code.
Right. Like you said you were going to be nervous, but you sound to be, a pro at this already. I don't know that we necessarily have a topic today, but we wanted to have...
We thought it would be fun if we brought in someone who is a newbie. We're going to say someone who's fresh to the professional ranks. And her asking us some questions on what it's like being a professional or questions that she might have as someone who's fresh to the game as two vets who've been in the game for a little while longer than she has. So just like super easy, any questions that she might have, and hopefully maybe it might be questions that people listening actually would have as well. So we're going to let Olivia kick it off with any questions that might be stirring in her head.
All right. Wow. Then let's just jump right in. I think that the biggest question for me as a first year pro and as a currently unsponsored athlete has to do with how do I know how much I'm worth to the track and field world? Like when the time comes for me to get my sponsorship, how will I know how much I'm worth?
Felicia and I are both looking at each other like,
That's a really good question.
That is a loaded question.
It's a really good question, but I think it also speaks to a lot of the issues that's within track and field.
Right.
Because I think in track and field, different from like football and basketball, people, you don't know other people's salaries. And so it's hard to make
that. And it's very hush-hush. No one really wants to talk about it either.
Exactly, yeah. But I think in that sense, when you keep it like that, you are giving power towards
to shoe companies
and to agents. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard. I think that it's hard to actually know how much you are worth because we don't actually have like set numbers to say like, okay, this is where I fall in. I think for me, I think the way I did it was just I put a lot of trust into the people who I had run track previously. And then my agent, and trusting that he was doing the best for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad because you do have to rely a lot on your agent to do that. And then whether it be your contract as well as appearance fees / prize money. Mm-hmm. I've been in an interesting, and I think Felicia, you can speak to this too, we're now living in an influencer world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting topic from the standpoint of there have been a couple of meets that I've probably made less money from, and I've made more from a post on social media. Also, we're now moving into, and this is for any of the track world out there, and I'm probably going to say something that's controversial because the agents and the meet promoters are on us about, like, when we go to these meets, they want us to post, like, we're going to these meets and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but for me to advertise on the one hand, is like, I do want to advertise that I am going to be there, right?
Yeah.
But to advertise the whole meet, I'm also like, I get paid to do that.
I get paid for that.
So if you want me to do that, you should be. And they're like on it about, like, you should do that. Do it. And I'm like, but I know you have money. Mm-hmm. And you want me to post about the meet, you should be putting a little extra money into my, because that is a value that I am bringing to the meet on top of my appearance, my performance, whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and it's the thing that even if, like, you try to have the conversation with your agents, because I'll be honest, my agent doesn't necessarily manage my social media, but in a nutshell, track hasn't caught up to that.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
It's a tough question because it's like, I know my worth off the track, and I feel like I somewhat know my worth on the track, but I know it because I know what my agent does for me.
Right.
Not,
right.
You know, but off the track, I also know what I make, and it's like, sometimes it doesn't match up, and I'm like, you want me to do extra over here, but, you know, so that's one of those things where, unfortunately, we don't have the answer for.
I think one thing that I would say to young athletes coming up, though, is I think a lot of young athletes think of only shoe companies.
Yeah.
And they think of only making money through a shoe company. And I think not being sponsored by a shoe company, being sponsored by a shoe company definitely does make things easier, but it is not the only avenue.
Right.
So I think it's important to be creative and to think outside of that box instead of only thinking, like, if I don't have a Nike contract or Adidas contract, well, that's it. I'm not making any money. And I think Natasha does a really good job. Like, there's lots of athletes that show, like, you can make money outside of. And, you know, it's branding, it's marketing. It might take a little bit more time. But I think in the long run, it actually makes you a more sustainable athlete. And then you're not kind of prey to only have, like, performances.
Relying on that, yeah.
So I think it's important to think a little outside the box, and track is so dominated by shoe companies, and having a shoe sponsorship definitely does make your life easier, but I think sometimes it can keep you in a box that you don't necessarily
have to
stay in. You
almost have to think about it, you know, when they say, like, diversify your investment portfolios and, like, diversify your income streams.
Yeah.
Like, and it's no different, you know, we run track professionally, or that's what we do for a living, but it's no different from that. Like, you know, having the ability to have money coming in from different places rather than just relying on having a shoe contract, because it's true, you don't necessarily end up with one. But if you have enough smaller contracts here or there, or, you know, you do an appearance or whatever, that adds up quickly too. So,
I think a lot of times we often think, because track is such a numbers game, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll think of ourselves only in terms of our performances. But I think there's a lot of value in knowing your story and developing that and being able to sell that as well.
Yeah.
Like, that is a benefit as well. Instead of just thinking, like, oh, I'm an Olympian, or just thinking, oh, I ran this time, so you should care about me. It's like, you're a human being who has a whole story that is so unique to you and you alone. And I think part of what people love about athletes is the journey.
Being able
the
to
getting
relate.
The, like, all of that. Like, people, we do things that most people don't do or don't have to go through, or it's the process to this, to, you know, wherever you're going to get to. So I think there's value in that process and in that journey, and letting people see that no matter wherever the destination ends up being.
Wow.
That was loaded.
That was a loaded question.
Yeah.
Good stuff, though. Thank you. And I want to delve a little bit more into that as you talked about branding off of the track. And Natasha, you said earlier that we're in a world where, you know, you have to be an influencer. You know, shoe companies, if you can sell shoes, then you can get a shoe contract. And you are your own business. And I guess I was just wondering what other when you talk about other sponsorships and other ways to get your story out there, what other ways were you thinking of? Like, I know, Felicia, you have, I've seen you doing TED Talks. Mm-hmm. Natasha, you have the Natasha Hastings Foundation. Mm-hmm. And various philanthropic efforts. What ways could I?
I think, like Felicia said, and I think it's twofold. It's number one, what's your story? Mm-hmm. But then number two, also showing what your interests are. Like, for me, a lot of my secondary sponsorships or gigs, whatever you want to call them, come from showing that I'm also interested in other things besides sports. I love beauty, so I get beauty posts and contracts, stuff like that. So I think, you know, there's having your story is what builds your following and what builds the, you know, that grabs that person that feels like they can relate to you. But then also showing what you're interested in is now when those two things cross and then you have other companies that are interested in working with you because, you know, okay, you have a story that's relatable. People want to see you. They want to know what you're doing, what your interests are. And then, you know, so what products match up with whatever that story is. And then, of course, you know, just what are you passionate about? So, I mean, for me, the foundation makes sense because I'm a little older, a little bit more experienced. I've seen some things. So, you know, from experience and not that, I mean, I guess at this point you've had a lot of similar experiences, but, you know, just seeing things along the way, then it became, okay, this is what I want to pay it forward. And then also thinking about, you know, after 2020 is retirement for me. So what is, like, just trying to stay two steps ahead of the game rather than waiting till retirement and then, oh, now what do I do? Mm-hmm. So I think finding what your story is, what are you comfortable with sharing, and then finding your interests and putting those things together.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. But, I mean, I think as an athlete, I think speaking engagements are like a huge mm-hmm. avenue, and especially for getting your story out there. And I think even like for you, like you went away to school on a scholarship, like you are already light years ahead of where some high school girls want to be. So you still have something to like provide and give to them in that sense mm-hmm. of like whatever you've learned going through university and now going like making the jump to say like, you know, I still want to pursue this. I know you studied biology. Like, there's so many things. So I would say, like, you can still be doing speaking stuff. But I think we also live in a day and age where the internet provides opportunities to create and opportunities to just put your story out there through content that most people, like, in older generations didn't have. So I think it's beneficial to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, this is wonderful. Thank you. I kind of want to go on the theme of lessons and things that you all have learned from your experience. I want to know, what are the biggest lessons and takeaways you've had from the circuit? Like being out on the running circuit, racing overseas, you know, cool. Diamond League events and whatnot.
Okay. There's the first thing that comes to my head. And I'm thinking about, so my very first race overseas was actually a London Diamond League in 2011. I got thrown right into Diamond League. Yeah.
I just keep remembering, like, because I'm like, I started in the Golden League. Age. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Can you explain what Golden League is? For those of us who don't know.
It was prior to Diamond League. Yeah,
prior to Diamond League.
A lot of the meets are the same.
It was similar to, yes, a lot of the meets are the very same. The Diamond League meet just took over what the Golden League was. Yeah. It was way more money.
Just a lot more money.
Like my first year on the circuit, I only ran three meets and like it was good enough money for me to live off for a year. Like wow. Yeah.
Why is there less money now?
Because they say they don't have no money, but
yeah.
And that's the thing again, we just have to believe what the meet promoters and what the IAAF is telling us. We don't really, nobody's opening their books for us, you know. We just have to believe that there's no money. But Golden League, it was some good money. But it was a lot like the Diamond League where it was a point system. And then there was a jackpot at the end. There was $1 million jackpot that if one person won it, you got the whole $1 million. If five people won it, five people split the $1 million. Mm. But the meets leading up to it was still good money. Like, and I said I made all that money. I didn't win one race. So keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I'll say, so my very first race overseas was London Diamond League. And I was first year out of university. I wasn't sponsored. And I just started running fast. But I remember getting there and just really telling myself, because these are girls that I had been watching on TV. And these are like, oh, my gosh, they're pros. Like, so, mm-hmm. right? But, like, kind of getting there and just being like, they're regular people. And to not stand in awe of anybody that I'm, like, competing against. So I feel like being in that situation, I just really had to teach myself, like, I think we can often overestimate our competitors and underestimate ourselves. But really just telling myself, like, you're here because you belong here. You were invited here. And you're on standing, everybody standing on the line is kind of like we're at equal when we're at the line type of thing. Yeah. Your PB or your season best means nothing because it's in doing it on the day, right? So, yeah, I think that was one of my biggest things being out on the circuit, like not standing in awe of anybody that I'm competing against.
I'm going to have to second that, as well as I got to like year six. And I was like flipping through my passport and like looking at all the places that I've been. And I was like, wow, this passport stamp is the only thing I remember from those trips. So not being in awe, knowing that I belong at those meets, I mean, that's probably been the biggest message for me in terms of just what my aha moment was in track and field, period. Like just knowing that I belong where I am. But then also taking advantage of the places that I've been, because there are some places that I haven't even been back to. I literally went for that track meet. That was it. I don't know if I'll ever get back to those places, you know? And then now, again, looking forward to retirement, or not looking forward to, but looking ahead to retirement. Some of these places, I don't know that I'll ever visit them again after retirement. So, you know, I got to a point where I was like, if I have the time to, because to be honest, sometimes you just get there in time just to get acclimatized for the meet and that's it. But if I have time to go out and take the city in, go out and do some sightseeing, have those moments with my training partners or my competitors, whatever it may be. So I had two things that I learned.
Yeah, I think that's huge, just being present. I think for me, it's been not even so much the circuit, but championships where I've lost those moments. Because I barely remember
my first Olympics.
You're so focused on, I have to do this, and like the race, and da-da-da-da. And it's like, there's so many moments in the lead up that you just miss.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, and you need to be focused. I'm not saying not to be focused, but like, there's a lot of laughs and a lot of really good moments that you
can
be
enjoying. I think you can be over-focused.
That's true.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
So, it's finding that like delicate balance between like knowing how to be on when you need to be on and how to just kind of be chilling when you need to be chilling too. Do you, now you talking about, the places that you've been to, do you collect anything now or do you do anything?
I collect Starbucks mugs.
Oh yes. I know that. Yeah.
I love coffee. So at first I started collecting wine, like from around the world. That's, I love red wine.
Okay, yeah.
And actually that idea came from my grandfather because I had bought my first home. It was a condo and I had a wine cooler installed and I was like, oh, I have to get wine bottles to put in there. My grandfather was like, oh, well, what you do is you travel, bring a bottle back from everywhere. And I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. But then see, the problem with that was I was getting the wine and drinking it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was collecting the wine, but it wasn't lasting very long. Mm-hmm. So everybody knows I love coffee. I love Starbucks. So wherever I go, if there's a Starbucks, I get a mug.
Has there been a Starbucks everywhere you've gone?
No, unfortunately, there aren't. And I really don't remember. It's rare that it happens that there isn't a Starbucks. And then sometimes, so like I'm from, my family is Trinidadian and Jamaican. Trinidad just got a Starbucks like last year or something. So my uncle sent me the mug. That's the other thing too. Like I don't want mugs from places that I haven't been. It's only,
if you've been.
But yeah.
So I've started, well, I do food or like wine or alcohol a lot. I don't like collecting. And I'll say this because I don't know if my dad listens to this, but my dad like collects things. Like he's like a hoarder. He has so much stuff, and I hate stuff now. So I hate stuff. So for me, I don't like having a bunch of things. But I do like feeling like I have something. So food stuff or like olives if when I went to Greece, like stuff like that, or wine. But I keep my bibs. I keep all my bibs. And I do want to do something artistic with my bibs once I'm done running.
I guess I should. Right now, I just have all of my bibs in a folder. Mm. And then Will hates this. Okay. Don't judge me.
Your numbers?
No, I don't have my numbers. But I've probably made about 10 or 11 teams by now. Mm. Maybe a little bit more.
Are your suitcases? Oh, yeah, I got way too many suitcases. It's a problem.
Well, it's like, no, I give the suitcases away. Because, and that's the problem with Team USA, right? Every single time you make a team, you get the entire collection all over again. Of course.
But I love that tradition.
I love it, too. And, of course, you know, nothing beats the Olympics. For the Olympics, you get everything. And I have my opening ceremony outfits. Like, probably never wear that stuff again. But yeah, I still have
all your gear,
my gear from over the years.
You don't trade any of it?
I used to do that. And I lied a little bit there. It did get to a point where, sometimes I would always take the kit that I ran in, and like maybe a sweatsuit or something. But after a while, I did get to a point where I would leave stuff in the village because it was
just
like,
leave it there.
I just had so much stuff.
Trust me, you're gonna get so much that you won't even. After your third team, you're gonna be like, okay,
it's so much stuff, and then you never. And then in my case, I'm not sponsored by the Team USA sponsor, so it's not even like I can use it. I'm just keeping it just for the sake of its memorabilia. So I keep what I actually used, but. You know, I mean, and let's keep it real. Most of the times when we go to world championships and we see like who's cleaning up and stuff, I'm like, you can use this stuff better than I can. So I leave quite a bit of it in the room.
Yeah. Same. After a while I started work. Cause the thing is I was just bringing it home and
it to just sit there.
It was literally just sitting there. And I mean, actually what I've also done too is I'll give it away to like younger athletes. Some of my stuff that I do as well. But I, even with me giving away probably more than half of what I've done. I have a whole suitcase that still just sits up.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to having that problem. Yeah. Oh, man. Wow.
You want to ask one more?
Sure.
Make it a good one.
It's a lot of pressure. Oh, here's one. How do you guys feel about the new world ranking system going into effect this year?
I'll go first.
Yeah.
I'm not really too versed in it, but
can we talk about what we know about it also first for the
take the lead.
Okay. So the new world ranking system is basically a system where you compete at a meet and all of the meets have, I guess, rankings and you get a certain amount of points from your place at that meet based on the meet's ranking and the time you ran in that race. Mm-hmm. So the old world ranking system, I believe, was just on time, right?
Yeah, like kind of. There was a little bit.
The meets did have some weight to it as well.
Yeah, but not as much as they do now.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, So, for example, a Diamond League meet would be your highest level meet.
Yeah.
Whereas something like, say, the NCAA championships, which is still a strongly competitive meet, ranks many levels lower than the Diamond League.
I'm sure they would still put some decent weight to the NC. Well, I don't, you know what? I don't know. I don't even know.
It's not a lot of weight.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, yeah, so I guess to sum it up, it's a shift from a system that was based mostly on time to a system that's based on both time, I'd say probably like half and half, like time and also the weight of the meet in which you're competing.
Right. So your question is,
how do
for the world ranking, for just the system or to qualify for the Olympics? Because the thing is, it's kind of two things. Where there's this, now there's a system to rank for world ranking, but they're also using that same ranking to qualify for teams now.
Right. So, yeah, give me both.
For both?
Yes.
I think I see what they're trying to do, and I think it's a positive shift, because I think sometimes when it's you are only based on time, there's, you know, people be going random places and all of a sudden running. All of a sudden.
There's somebody somewhere down in Florida that I've been dying to go run a 100 at. But, you know,
I think there's issue with that, because sometimes when it's only on time, people will have this one time on their record that you've never seen before. Like, they never get anywhere close to again. So that's one. But I think in terms of qualifying for teams and that stuff, there's work that needs to be done. And I say this because Diamond Leagues weighted heavily. And anybody who is from a place that hosts a Diamond League, I think is at an advantage because a lot of times you'll see there's like six really competitive people, and then there's two people who are just they're from wherever,
to put
but that's what I'm saying. They're getting points just based off of being from that place and getting into that meet. Right. I think that's not fair anymore. So if it is going to be this new system where world ranking is going to be like that and Diamond Leagues are the highest, you can't just put anybody into a Diamond League. And then it gets kind of tricky, because then it's like, do you just have the same eight people continually going to Diamond Leagues and you're not giving opportunities for other people to potentially get points? So there's things that need to be figured out in terms of how do we, you know, figure out who gets into meets and when and whatnot. And so I do think it's a shift in the right direction, but there's work that needs to be done to clarify things. And I think they haven't thought everything through yet.
Yeah. So is it my turn?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Because I was like, I don't want to talk about this. I'm with you in that I feel like it's a shift in the positive direction. But I have some different takeaways from it. I do think it's not perfect. I do think that it needs some work. And I also think that they need to do a better job of explaining why they're moving in this direction. The reason why I'm a fan of it is because, number one, we talk about being a professional sport. Until we start behaving like a professional sport, how can we ask to be recognized as a professional sport?
Yes.
So, first and foremost, I'm hearing a lot of people are complaining about NCAAs not having enough weight. We're one of probably the only sport, and I'm probably wrong about this, that non-professionals can compete in a professional arena. And I will be the first to admit that I made a team fresh out of college. I also got to world championships and did not make it out of the semifinals. Now, that is a trend that we see more likely than not. There are a few anomalies who do compete throughout the collegiate year and then get to the world championships and are still able to produce.
Right.
But we see that far and few between. Let me finish my point. Okay. But that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen at all. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of the times the collegiate athletes take a spot on the team and then they get to the world champs and don't produce. And I'm saying that from one of those spots. I'm calling myself out on it. And again, if we want to be recognized as a professional sport, we got to operate as a professional sport. The next thing being the ranking system. The ranking system forces everyone to compete.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about selling a standard package to fans and TV TV stations so that we get consistent coverage. Felicia and I were talking about this the other day. If Usain Bolt is at a track meet, it's sold out. Everyone's tuning in to the track meet. But if under the current rules, Usain Bolt only has to show up to his nationals and the world championships, who wins? Only Usain Bolt. But if he has to show up to all of the Diamond Leagues to get those points to qualify for the world championships,
it's a difference,
everybody wins. Everybody wants to tune in to watch the meet. So that is why I feel like it is a move in the positive direction. Now, in the current standings, the athletes have full autonomy. We make full autonomy from the standpoint of we can say, these are the meets that I want to run. This is the schedule that I want to have. And then the last bit of autonomy is left up to the meet promoter and the agents to get you into those meets. Unfortunately, there are only 8 lanes on the track. So there are only so many lanes that can be filled. And your point about locals being added into the meets is true, but it's also from the standpoint of, if I want local people to buy tickets,
yeah,
I got to please them too, yeah, you know? So there's the business side of it that I feel like needs to be better explained,
right,
to bring athletes more to the table about it. But I don't think it's perfect. I think it does have some kinks that they need to work out, but I do think it's a move in the right direction. So you were getting ready to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say that on your point on the sport being the most professional, unprofessional sport,
mm-hmm,
I think that's how you put it. It's not just collegians who are taking those spots on world teams necessarily. Like, I personally, one of my favorite things about the Olympics are the stories of people who are just regular people who trained, you know, at full-time jobs and made a team.
Oh, okay.
Like the Boris Berian story.
Yeah.
Do you guys know who Boris Berian is, right?
Yeah.
Like his story.
Yeah.
But he's
not taking a spot. What do you like?
He did. He made the 2016 team.
Oh, I see what you're saying. But you're saying because he's not paid.
He wasn't at the time. He then went on to get a contract. But at the time, it's okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's not just collegians who are non-professionals who are getting spots. I don't know. I just have a soft spot in my heart for those stories and the fact that can happen in track and field.
That's the part where, and I hate to sound like this, but it's almost like everybody sort of wants this to be, fair isn't the word, that isn't the right word. But again, you can't walk on anybody's NBA court and say, I just want to be on the team. And it, you know what I mean? And that's not to take away. I think those stories are beautiful stories. But if we as the athlete or as the sport want to move into a more professional space and be viewed as professional athletes, we have to operate as a professional organization.
Here's what I have to say about that. I think the issue is the fact that, and we spoke about this before, the Olympics is our biggest thing. Mm-hmm. If we're going to occupy a professional space, that we have to have our something that's the professional space.
So that's probably the piece that needs to be
But in saying that, then you're kind of like, let's say Diamond League is supposed to be that. Then should Diamond League cross over into Olympics? Because technically, it should be two separate things. If we're really trying to make a, like, you know what I mean? Because like you're saying, like, you can't just walk onto anybody's NBA team, but anybody can potentially make the U.S. Olympics.
Right.
It's two separate things. It's different.
Right.
Our issue is that we're meshing the two and we're making, and the fact that the Olympics is our thing.
Right.
Is why we're not going anywhere as a professional sport.
Mm. Very fair point. Very fair point. So maybe this is like the stepping stone to that.
Yeah. But the thing is, they're still blending.
That's very fair. Very, very fair.
Because really, it should be like Diamond League is Diamond League, and then there needs to be some way to make it however you make Olympics. Yeah.
I mean, I still love the idea of having, and I know we got to wrap up soon, I still absolutely love the idea of having the Olympic trials, the World Championship trials.
Yeah.
I do. But just because going back to like the whole story and just like, and even going back to other sports, I do hate comparing us to other sports because I feel like it's apples to oranges, but every other sport goes through a playoffs, a championship, mm-hmm, like what you go through something to make that championship game. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't like the idea necessarily of it being entirely a point system, but I do think on having a point system in place to ensure that everyone competes, I think that is important. So maybe it's not necessarily a point system, but it's just the rule like, hey, you got to compete in this many meets in order to be eligible to go to your nationals, to qualify for the team or something like that. But there has to be some, right now in track and field, no one is held to any standard.
Yeah.
Like, you just show up And if you make the team, if you perform, great. But otherwise, it's like anybody can walk in on the field. And I think, again, to elevate as a sport, we got to put a standard in place.
I agree with that.
I agree with that as well. I think that there needs to be a standard. But I do think that there still needs to be the opportunity to, like you were saying, have a playoff in a sense or a qualifier for the world championships.
As in saying, like U.S. championships.
Yes, yeah. Like a U.S. championships. In part because of people who are injured as well. Mm-hmm. Like there are people who might get injured at the beginning of the season who mm-hmm. might be fit to make a world team, but if they don't get enough points throughout the season.
Yeah.
Well, that's point system, well, that's the argument for the standard. Because if right. you do hit the standard, then the world yeah. ranking kind of goes out the door. And right. I know for Canada, we still have to come top three at our championships. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it is now also based on what weight they want to put on yeah. their national championship. So I think it puts everybody in this weird space because now people are like, I don't even know how to qualify
yeah.
in a lot of ways. But I mean, any transitions, that's kind of what
kinks. You're going to have to work the yeah. kinks out for yeah. sure. For sure.
Steps in the right direction, though.
Right.
Right.
All right. Well, this was great. Olivia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for the questions. Awesome
questions. As usual, we both have had sit downs with Olivia, and there's no visual to this, but Olivia came with her notes. She came ready.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Felicia, you do the closing. Sorry.
Thanks for tuning in, y'all. Diva Chronicles.
Yeah, that part.
Same place, same time. I don't even think, yeah. Anyways, we coming at you next week. Stay tuned.
Bye.
Toodles.
Bye.